We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning from Illinois Public Media. This is Focus. I'm Celeste Quinn. The producers for the program, Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal. Kyle Mabry is our technical director this morning. Well, today on the program, I'm so pleased to welcome to Focus for the very first time dog trainers Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm. Carol and Jim are with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, and for years they were among the most popular guests on the Afternoon Magazine. And we are pleased that they have agreed to join us on Focus. Listeners, your questions about dogs are invited. Give us a phone call or join us with an email message. The numbers in for the phone, 333-9455. That's for the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, that number 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. So good to see you.
And it's good to see you, Celeste.
Nice to
see
you.
Is it Friday afternoon?
It's Friday morning.
See, it doesn't say 1:08. It says 11:08.
Yeah, I was looking at that. Go ahead. It's wrong.
So what's happening with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana
this summer? Oh, we have got a great week coming up for just about anybody out there. We have a confirmation bee match, which is a confirmation show, but a match, so it doesn't really count. That's Wednesday night, and that's at 5:45, I think, is check-in. At the same time, we'll be having an obedience fun match or a ring-ready match. And that, what time does that start?
Same time,
I believe. Mm-hmm. And then Thursday night, we have our canine good citizenship evaluation and test process. And then this coming weekend, we have our AKC obedience trial.
Now, so, that's a little confusing. This coming weekend could be tomorrow.
Okay, a week from this weekend.
Right.
Thank you. That you're right, though.
I'm always right.
I know.
And for the specifics?
This would be the 12th and 13th of June.
Okay. And for all the specifics, people
website.
Can...
Go to our website. It's there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Very
Not
good.
To mention, on July 10th.
July 10th, we have a health clinic, which is really going to be very – we haven't done one before. And we're having it out at the Dog Training Club, and it's sponsored by the Champaign Kennel Club. And they will have a cardiologist will be there to do OFA heart exams, ophthalmologist to do eye exams for CERF purposes, CERF. We will have a veterinarian that will be doing microchipping and vaccinations. We will have the Humane Society will be there with a booth.
Grooming.
Grooming, yeah, that's right. We have a groomer coming to do nails. People don't like to do nails.
Uh-huh.
Photographers. If you want to get your dog's photograph taken professionally, they'll be there. So, and that information is also up on our website and also on our Facebook page. This information is there as well.
Okay. Is there any fee associated with this?
There'll be a fee with the health clinic. The heart exams are $30.
The heart and eye you have to sign up for in advance.
Yes. That's all that information is there, so people need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And the eye exam is either 20 or 25. I should know this by heart. I've seen it a dozen times. Grooming, I don't know what that fee is going to be, but it would be very nominal. Vaccinations and microchipping, they would be competitively priced.
Okay. Well, what do you say you put your headsets on and we'll take a telephone call from a listener in Indiana on line 4. Good morning.
Well, sounds like a wonderful thing. I'm going to try to get some luck get started here with we have a Paws for Cause group that take care of cats and dogs.
Cats?
And something like that. Unfortunately, they don't have a lot of monies to do those things, but that'd certainly be something they should think about. I have a question about my black lab. To say the least, he's protector of home and hearth. Once a month, we get the man who does the water meters and the electric meters. Electric meters, he has to go through a fence that we double lock, and he reads it off, and then every once in a while the dog is out there, or he smells him coming somehow. And you can, most of the neighborhood, you can hear these start barking. You know, well, there's the meter man at that house, and he's approaching, and there's some sort of a tension in the air. And Mackie absolutely goes crazy. At times, I think he might go to the fence. But I got a short thing on him, and I pulled him back. I had a lot of trouble getting him in yesterday. Had his favorite tree, paid no attention to it whatsoever. Protecting the property in the home is the most important thing. What I'm concerned about is I got him in the house, and, of course, he barks at every window. I'm afraid he's going to go through a window. Then the man goes out front, opens up the meter to check the water, and the dog sees that for a while. It took him 25 minutes to stop barking. Then throughout the day, every so often you hear this, you know, and I would go out and look around and just think this is some sort of carryover. Is this normal? I guess that's what I'm after. Other than that, he's just a pussycat, so to speak, and, you know, the regular lab retriever. Maybe they don't talk about these things in books about retrievers, but my God, he's protective, and it takes him a long time to get down normal. And I'm concerned about the effect of the, you know, sort of nervousness, I'll call it. And if there's anything to be concerned about, it's that, this is normal, and as long as he gets back to normal, you know, shouldn't be concerned about it. That's my question. Thank you.
I've forgotten how old this dog is, because you've called a couple times.
Oh, he's about, probably 18 to 2 years right now. He's coming out of his puppyhood, as my girlfriend says. But he's not too yet.
Not quite, yeah.
He's close, yeah.
This is a non-dog solution, but the meter companies are capable of installing, you know, these radio things where they can literally just drive by your house and read whatever meter is necessary. And you might look into that.
Okay.
But in terms of this kind of behavior, probably you're right. It's protective behavior, but it's also it's more in the alarm duties of a dog. You know,
okay.
Dogs are supposed to protect the area, but
right.
They're also supposed to let you know when strangers are coming.
Right, right, okay.
And you know, and there's a range of behavior. Some dogs kind of look up and go woof. Some sleep. You know, and
yeah.
Or others react the way your guy's reacting.
Yeah.
I think it's important when the dog's doing this not to use corrections. I think you're doing the right thing with treats.
Yeah.
And him ignoring the treats indicates that his attention is really focused on this guy.
Yes.
And not on the food. So what you have to do is kick up the treat considerably. And let me suggest this. When you're training a dog, you want to control all the variables.
Yes.
Clearly, you know, if you're watching as the world turns and this meter reader shows up, you're not ready. And the dog's going nuts, and it's really too late to start training the dog.
Yeah.
So have a friend that the dog doesn't know at a prescribed time come over. And I don't know when you do you feed your dog in the morning? Or in the evening, or both, or. But I would really, if you feed him in the morning, I'd delay feeding him.
Okay.
Have his food ready,
yeah.
And then have your friend come in as if he's a meter reader.
Yeah.
And
okay.
And you're ready. You have your dog on leash.
Yeah.
You have the food. You walk him over to a pad that you've gotten specifically for this purpose, a little throw rug or something.
Yeah.
And you feed the dog right there.
Okay.
Another thing you can do is keeping the dog on lead. When the stranger comes in, walk your dog out to the stranger and have him give him his morning meal.
I see.
Now, the dog, if the dog is merely alerting that there's a stranger in the area, having the stranger feed him isn't going to stop that the next time a stranger comes.
Yeah, right.
But I think it'll cut way back on the recovery. You know, so he starts barking at a stranger. You go, thank you, pal. You did a good job. Here's your morning breakfast.
Yeah.
And so, in other words, when he's barking, he's trying to alert you to danger.
Yes.
If you ignore the danger,
right.
That just makes him keep barking more.
Yeah.
So if you say, yes, this is dangerous, you might even go out and greet the person, shake their hands.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, because dogs put a lot of store in touching.
I wanted to do that, but at the same time, Mackie's trying to get through the fence, and I have a short leash on him, and, you know, I was smiling at the meter man, and he has dogs, and so he, you know, he's pretty...
Yeah, I wouldn't walk up to the stranger with the dog, but I'd have the dog easily see that you're, you know, touching the other person. As I said, dogs, when dogs greet each other, they... You know, they don't say hi. They rub each other, and so there's a lot of touching going on.
Okay.
So if you can shake hands or put your hand on their shoulder and say hi, pal, that again, it won't cure everything, but it'll really help.
Okay.
And I would have like two or three strangers lined up. So one comes in, the dog goes nuts. You feed him. Then the next guy comes in. You shake hands. You do all that, and do it several times in a row.
Yes.
And maybe, you know, depending on how many friends you are. Do it maybe twice a week for a couple of weeks, you know, because he has a pretty well-established behavior here, and it's going to take some effort to get rid of it.
Okay, okay. Well, it's sort of hit in the right direction. I've been paying attention to him when he barks. I do not let him just bark aimlessly or anything. Mm-hmm. I let him know that we're thankful and all that kind of stuff.
But I wouldn't yell at him, or I'd use a gentle voice. And the reason is, if you're yelling, he regards that as barking as well.
Oh.
So he thinks you agree with him. He doesn't say, oh, he's yelling at me. You must be yelling at this stranger. And again, I don't know what goes on in dogs' minds. I'm only guessing. But if you're yelling and he's yelling, he thinks that you are agreeing with him. So I wouldn't say no, shut up, or anything, really. Just give him food.
Okay. I hope that helps. And that listener, I think we'll call in the next time you guys are on. So we'll get a progress report. You guys will be back. We're just not sure when, but it will be a first Friday kind of thing in the 11 o'clock hour. Well, now we're joined by someone from the Champaign County Humane Society on line two. This is Michelle McKnight. I asked her to call in this morning because there's something we want to make people aware of, and that is something that is called dog flipping. And Michelle joins us this morning to tell us about it. Michelle, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Well, how does this work?
Okay. So dog flipping, I became aware of it off of Craigslist and another incident that happened back in 2009 in Michigan. What happens is a person will kind of basically go to different places, whether it's Craigslist, the newspaper, and they will find animals that people are trying to find a home for or, you know, giving away for free because they can't take care of them. They claim to be a person that is an animal lover, will take great care of this animal, but actually what they're doing is they're trying to get this animal so they can make money off of it. So they'll get the animal for free or a very low price, and they will flip it, which means they will then go ahead and sell it for a much higher price, either on Craigslist or other internet sites.
Now, I don't imagine this can make someone much money.
Well, it really depends. The latest case that we were dealing with, this person got Ingrid, as you know, for free from someone off of Craigslist, I believe, in Indiana. And he was planning to sell her for between $300 and $400.
Well, tell us about the puppy named Ingrid.
Okay. Ingrid, I actually was kind of tracking this guy through Craigslist. I saw multiple postings that he had for different dogs pretty much every week. Finally tracked him down through someone that actually purchased an animal from him that was very sick. So I accompanied animal control to his apartment, where we found eight dogs living in a very, very tiny space, maybe 300 to 400 square feet. Ingrid was actually tucked away in a bedroom, and, you know, he claimed that there were only seven dogs when, in fact, I went searching through the apartment with his consent and found Ingrid in a very tiny crate. She had been purchased, he said, maybe a week prior to that day, and she had multiple bite wounds, a very, very large abscess on the top of her head. Apparently, she had been attacked by one of the other dogs in the house. His plan was to not take her to the vet because he couldn't afford it. He was, medicating himself, doing peroxide and just random things to try to fix the dog. After she was, fixed in his mind, he was going to sell her.
Is this illegal?
Dog flipping is not illegal. The care that they are giving is. It's against the law to, have a dog like her that needs medical care, and he's not giving her the care that she needs.
Well, I guess if there's a good outcome here, it's that Ingrid is out of that situation and has now been placed with the family, correct?
Exactly.
Okay. Since it isn't illegal, how do you approach someone who's doing this?
Really, we need some inside tips from people. The only reason that we found out what was going on, besides the Craigslist, was a person that purchased a dog from him. So it really takes, people from the community to bring it to our attention. When we investigate it, we can, impound animals or write violations based on the care that they're giving them.
How can we make sure we don't unwittingly become part of something like this?
It's really tough, but, if you have an animal that you are not able to keep yourself, if you choose not to bring them to a shelter, I really recommend not posting an animal for free on any type of website. Always have a rehoming fee or adoption fee. Always visit the person's home. Ask for medical records if they have dogs or cats in their house. Check for rabies tags. And I would always suggest getting references, especially of that reference, to make sure they actually do care properly for the animals.
How big a problem is this?
I honestly don't know. I think it's kind of a new phenomena that people are just kind of, realizing that it's going on. I've only dealt with one case so far in the Champaign County area. And the only other case that I know of was in Michigan in 2009, but I'm sure it's going on everywhere. We just don't know about it.
And Craigslist is part of the equation here.
Yes.
How do you tackle that problem? Is it tackleable, if I can use that word?
That's another thing. A lot of people will post different things on Craigslist, because they just don't know what to do with their animal, and they don't want to take it to a shelter because they fear that it might possibly be euthanized because of, overcrowding or not enough resources. So I think, Craigslist, you can use it. You just have to use it wisely.
Okay. Michelle, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Michelle McKnight is with the Champaign County Humane Society. This is Focus, and we're talking today about dogs. Dog trainers Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm are with us this morning. And we can come back and talk a little bit more about this with Jim and Carol, but we've got someone waiting patiently for us. Oh, no, maybe they'll call back.
For years and years, the advice was to never offer a dog for free because of the fear they'd end up in a laboratory situation or a Class B dealer would get the dog. That was always the and a free animal to some has less value. So there was always that in the back of my mind too. Free to a good home is not a good thing, but this little wrinkle is
really
rather
troubling.
Bizarre. And if you look at Craigslist and you look at the animals, I think there was more of that going on because they always ask for an adoption fee of several hundred dollars, which is fine as long as it's all legitimate. It's Craigslist is really kind of a creepy place as far as I'm concerned, but
yeah. Jim, how do you and Robin vet potential owners when you have had pups?
Well, we're a little old fashioned. We don't have a web page. We don't go on Facebook. We don't Twitter. But we're pretty well known in the Malamute circles. Now we don't actually visit people's homes all the time. Very often people, like if we sell to somebody in Japan, it would be very difficult to do that. But we have the people come over several times. If they call, we'll say, yeah, we have. If we have a litter, we'll say, they're 2 weeks old. Why don't you come over and look at them? And when they come over, we say, oh, we show up the other dogs, and we just let the dogs out. We don't give – if it's a guest and who isn't going to buy a dog or interest in dogs, we keep the dogs kind of away from them because the dogs are going to jump on them and lick them, and the dogs are fairly dirty relative to mm-hmm. guests. But if somebody wants a dog, we just let them go and just watch how the people react with a big dog. And some I can remember two instances, but especially with little kids. One little kid was terrified of these, you know, of our dogs. Mm-hmm. And he was maybe 6 or 7. And we said to his parents, the people, we said, you don't want a dog like this. Your son is afraid of him. And then we had kind of the opposite experience where the kid was beating our dogs with sticks that he found. And we said that similarly, we said, you don't want a dog like this. You know, there's no dog that isn't going to bite your kid eventually, and it will always be the dog's fault in everybody else's eyes. But it's going to be his fault because he doesn't know how to deal with dogs. So that's mostly how we do it. But we interview people. Mm-hmm. One person once said to me, I'm not trying to go to, enter your school here at the university. I just want to buy a dog. And I'm, yeah, well, you're not going to get one from us. Sorry.
Rescue groups do home visits. And when I was doing Golden Retriever Rescue, no dog was placed unless we had one of our volunteers throughout the state do a home visit. And I was doing them for a Labrador Retriever Rescue Group out of Indiana. I was the contact here in Central Illinois, and I do the home visits for them. And it's not to see how clean or dirty the house is. I remember one I did, and I was just appalled, and it was here. And she wanted a Labrador Retriever. And I went to her house, and she was very nice. But she told me that she did not want the dogs in certain areas, and so she was going to, in order to keep it out of the living room or whatever area she deemed inappropriate, she was going to hotwire those those rooms. And I'm sitting there thinking, there is no way you're getting any dog, because not only was I going to turn her down for the lab people, but I would let my contacts out there know that this was her solution to keeping a dog out of a room.
Never heard of baby gates, I guess.
Yeah, I'll never forget that. I just sat there.
I can see her getting up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom and stepping on this.
And wouldn't it serve her right?
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, so, you know, there's things that people will say or do. And then on the other hand, fortunately, these are very rare. I wouldn't even remember it. But mm-hmm. But it's not practical for, say, the shelter to go out and do home visits.
Sure.
But for rescue groups, it is part of their criteria. So, yes, indeed, if you are rehoming an animal through Craigslist or the newspaper, Michelle's advice was very good. You know, go to their house and see how and where they live.
Ask for those records.
Sure. It's certainly highly appropriate to find that information out for yourself.
Now, here's a question that comes to mind. How do you know that you're dealing with a legitimate rescue group?
That's good. Legitimate rescue groups are 501c3. They most often have websites. You can find people that adopted from them. I work occasionally with the Golden Retriever Rescue Group up in the Chicago area, and I know they're perfectly legitimate because everything about them says so. But to adopt a dog from them, you'd be perfectly comfortable doing so. To relinquish a dog to them, same thing. So yeah, there's a lot of merit to that. But most rescue groups within the breed, Jim, for example, would know of Malamute rescue groups and their legitimacy.
Yeah, well, Robin's done home visits for mm-hmm. the Malamute rescue folks, and we've been to their facilities, mm-hmm. The people we do the mm-hmm. home visits for. Yeah.
And their adoption application and their interview process is extremely stringent, so that doesn't mean they're legitimate, but it goes a long way toward solidifying that.
Okay. So whatever you're thinking about doing, check it out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then I think the shelter should, you know, we're fortunate here in this community. We have an excellent shelter. I have a golden Facebook friend, and he sent some photos out this week. photos out this week of a shelter in his community in Kentucky, and it was nothing more than a dilapidated barn-like structure, overgrown. But we're lucky here, and if you have an animal that you need to relinquish, consider the shelter first, because that's your best opportunity for making certain the dog or cat or rabbit or hamster or whatever is placed appropriately.
Okay, very good. This is Focus. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn. Dog trainers Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel are with us this morning. They're with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. For many years, they were guests on the Afternoon Magazine on the first Friday of the month. And that 1 o'clock hour, no longer with us. Terry Gross is there in that spot now. So they're here with us today on Focus, and from time to time, they'll be back with us here on Focus. Listeners, if you've got a question or a comment about dogs, give us a call or join us with an email message. The numbers, the phone numbers, 333-9455. That's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-WILL. The toll-free number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. That's will-talk@illinois.edu. No one waiting for us at the moment on the phones.
If I can add one thing to what Carol said, yes. The local Humane Society also works with breed rescue groups and other rescue groups. So just an additional reason to take your dog to the shelter if you can't keep it.
Yeah. And if folks are out there listening and they're interested in learning more about the shelter has educators that go out into
excellent.
The community.
Very good. Yes, they do a
can
fine
talk
job.
With children's groups or adults.
Sure. Rotary Club, they'll be happy to speak to. You know, it's funny because when you're involved in these little aspects of our community, you somehow assume that everybody knows the same information, and they don't. It's surprising. So, yes, contact the shelter if you want them to come out and speak to a group or a club.
Okay,
they'd be happy to.
Let's take a call from a listener in Normal on line 4. Hello.
Hi. I'm calling about a dog that I called you about once before when he was a very bitey puppy. Now he is almost 15 months old, and he doesn't bark at strangers. Is this normal? Never had a dog that didn't bark at strangers.
Well, what kind of dog is it? I can't recall.
Yellow Lab.
Yeah, no, it's not uncommon because I have a Golden, and he rarely barks. So when he does, I pay attention.
He loves people. He's never met anybody he didn't like. So
see, that's more typical behavior than the earlier caller.
Okay.
For a lab.
I meant to clarify that. But no, I really wouldn't worry about it. And many dogs don't bark until they're older.
Okay. He's just recently begun to perk up his head and look alert when there's noises that he hears. So.
If you want, you can teach him to speak.
Oh, no, I did that once.
So. Yeah, see? So you have to count your blessings here.
Yes, okay.
No, there's nothing unusual. The Malamutes rarely...
Oh, they don't bark.
They don't bark at anything. They'll howl, but at 6:30 this morning...
I remember one time going out to Jim and Robin's place and walking up to the fence, and all of a sudden these big... It was twilight, dusk, and these big shapes just appeared at the fence. There was no barking or nothing, just these big dogs.
Creepy. I'm happy to report that he has mostly stopped biting. It took a really, really, really long time, just in the last 2 months or so, that he doesn't try to bite to get you to play. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, good for you for being patient and hanging in there.
Well, it was touch and go for a long time, but thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign on line 1. Hi.
Hello. I'm calling with a question about my dog. I'm a therapist here in town, and I'm interested in having my dog certified as a therapy dog, and I was wondering what the resources are for that.
We actually do provide therapy training for a dog to be certified by Delta. So we can get you some information if you like. They just had a class that just ended, I think, 2 weeks ago, and one of our members is a certified Delta evaluator.
I see.
And if you want to leave some information after we're off the air.
Go to
and
the
we
website.
Can contact you or go to our website and send a message. We'll get in touch with you.
Okay, very good.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Kyle, you want to pick that up maybe and see if the listener is still there and get that information? Either that or he can join, get that through the website. And let me give the phone numbers once again. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Our email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, it's summertime. Maybe what we should do is, before we get out of time, make sure that we remind folks that in the heat and the humidity, take care of yourself, you want to take care of your animals.
That's
as
another
well.
Thing that just perplexes me to no end is why people think it's okay to leave your dog in the car with the windows rolled up. But they do it to their kids. So,
yeah.
You know, it just does not. I can't comprehend
and
what,
the other thing I want to point out is, and I see this a lot, people know better than to leave the windows all the way up, but they'll crack them maybe a half an inch. And that is not nearly enough to ventilate. And they'll have only one window open a half an inch, so absolutely no breeze can get through. That's not enough. And unfortunately, keeping the windows open enough to ventilate for the dog probably would mean the dog could get out if they're not otherwise restrained. But if you're going to leave your dog in the car, you don't want to kill
him. Right?
Leave him at home.
Yeah, and if you see, and I've done this, if you see a dog in a car with the windows rolled up and nobody in the car, go ahead and call the non-emergency 911 number and report it. Because, number one, it's illegal. Number two, it's cruel. And number three, you might be saving the dog's life. So I had an incident last summer that I was involved in, and I walked into the restaurant and found the three people eating that had left their dog in the car. And I was so mad. I can't remember ever being so angry. And they truly didn't think they'd done anything wrong until when we walked outside, the Champaign police officer was waiting for them at their vehicle.
Ooh. Okay. Mm-hmm. And if it's really hot and humid, don't run with your dog.
No, absolutely not.
Or don't bicycle with the dog on the lead. Okay.
And another safety tip, if your dog seems to be in heat prostration, get them to a veterinarian. Don't try to cool them down. Mm-hmm. The problem is their blood is losing fluid and it's becoming harder and harder to pump through their system. Cooling them down might make that worse. What you have to do is treat them for shock and get fluids into them. And you have to go to the vet for that. So delaying by trying to cool them down can actually be bad if they're already in.
Oh, they'll die. They can die.
Let's take another call. We've got a couple of people waiting to talk with us. First, we're going to go to Monticello, line one. Hi.
Hi. I recently bought a German Shepherd male about 6 months ago, and I've already had someone come up to me and ask about breeding him, possibly using him for a stud fee or stud service in possibly December. He'd be about a year and 2 months old. What is the normal rate that a person would get out of a stud fee, or is that a fair question?
Jim's a good one to answer that.
Yeah, if it's a backyard breeder, you know, ask for as much as you can get. If you want to be a humane, intelligent breeder, one, you're going to want to take a picture of this dog's hips, make sure he doesn't have hip dysplasia because that's heritable. You want to check his eyes. You want to check his temperament because temperament is heritable. You want to check the prospective mother, make sure she has all those things. When we do stud services, we also provide a brucellosis check and certificates of all the things I just mentioned, eyes, hips.
Heart for Goldens. Heart and elbows for Goldens.
I was going to say elbows is becoming more popular. We can't get a heart certificate anymore because the U of I doesn't have a cardiologist.
That's why he's coming to the health clinic.
Yeah. So obviously if you've gone through the trouble of certifying your dog, you can the market's a little better. But I strongly suspect that the prospective mother, the owner of the prospective mother, doesn't care anything about any of these things if he's just looking at your dog and saying, hey, let's breed him.
Any price range? I mean, when I bought this dog, it was a fairly large amount of money, and we were told to keep him whole, he'll be worth quite a bit breeding.
Why don't you call the breeder from whom you purchased him and ask them what they would recommend?
Yeah, I got his opinion, and there's a wide variation. That's why I was wondering.
Well, I think it would be an antitrust violation if people started sharing all this. You know, it's...
Okay.
Often it's just what you can get.
Often it's just a puppy out of the litter, too.
Well, that's what I suggested was the first choice, and then the original person said $800 the one we purchased him from. And this guy's lowballing it like at $100 or $50. And I'm like,
well, that kind of gives some credence to Jim's theory.
Let me strongly recommend that you get a contract.
Oh, yeah. No, I will. I just was curious. Heard you guys on the radio, and I thought I'd call and see.
Yeah, and your breeder probably is very familiar with the OFA categories for hips and the different tests they need for German Shepherds. I'm sure he's done that.
We've got everything on my dog. He's certified all that.
Well, he can't get certified on hips until he's 2 years old.
Yeah,
hips
at 2 years. Okay. Before that, doesn't count.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign on line 2. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling because we have a senior citizen schnauzer who seems to be having some difficulty already with heat. We keep our house around 79 degrees through the summer, sometimes 80, and we keep him cut short. But I've been noticing that even with a short walk down the block, he seems to be overheating. And
how old is he?
He is older, and that was my question. Do dogs' thermostats go wacky when they are older?
I think it's more of a heart condition.
Okay.
I'd have to agree.
Okay. He does have a heart murmur.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've been walking him in the morning and the evening, but my husband likes to walk him frequently throughout the day and makes me nervous.
Suggest that, if he's geriatric, is he over 10?
Yes.
Is he over 12?
Possibly. We're not certain.
Yeah. You're dealing with a dog that's older, and it's just, it's the same process that we all age and aren't able to do the things we were at one point in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And we can heed that when it comes to ourselves. We have to steward those that depend on us.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say walking him in the morning and the evening is sufficient.
Depending on how old he is and you're unsure, right. It could be congestive heart failure.
Mm-hmm.
And you really want to check that out.
Yes, he's had his checkup this year, and the vet has said to us, just watch him because, he's got this heart murmur, and it's been since we've had him, which has been about 5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't want to end up with a really sick dog because of him being out too much.
Yeah. Well, moderate exercise is good, but several times a day for an older dog is probably too
much.
And
it's like, for example, today the temperature itself is fairly cool.
Mm-hmm.
The humidity is extremely high.
Yes.
Which makes it a struggle for him to cool himself.
Yeah.
To breathe well. He's probably panting a lot when he walks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And when he gets back in, he just looks like a wilted dog.
Yeah, you need to pay attention to that, and your husband needs to recognize your feelings, too.
I'm just going to have to tell him he can't walk him as often, and the dog begs to be taken for walks.
Oh, of course they do.
Loves it.
They do.
So the problem's going to be more with the husband than with the dog.
Well, if you have a closed-in backyard, you can hide toys and food in your backyard and let him hunt for them, and he can get a little bit of exercise but a lot of enjoyment without overdoing it. And again, it sounds more like a heart problem than a heat problem.
Okay, so I'll just have to tell him, we need to be cautious. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
You're welcome. And someone has called in and wanted to know in terms of being out with an animal when it's hot and humid, is there any guideline for how hot, how humid?
You have to pay attention to the dog. If they if they are panting to excess, if they appear uncomfortable, they're too hot.
Watch their tongue.
Yes. Exactly.
Their tongue starts lolling, you know, get them in the shade.
And always, I'm teaching an outdoor class now. So I want people to bring water with them because it's critical that the dogs have access to cool water at all times. Not cold, but cool. But then just use common sense, you know, and it just makes me cringe when I see people jogging. I saw somebody jogging the other morning and the dog, a gentle leader is a great thing. It was wearing a gentle leader, but
can't
the
get his
poor
mouth
tongue
open.
Was, yeah. It was a golden, the tongue was hanging way out. And I thought, well, hope you're enjoying that run. He's not, the dog's not. They enjoy being with you.
Right.
But they don't necessarily enjoy what they're going through.
And maybe a quick review. Dogs don't have pores in their skin the way we do. So 90%, 95% of their cooling system is their lungs. And if it's hot and humid already, it's hard for them to cool down sucking in hot, humid air and blowing it back out. It doesn't cool them off the way it should. And so they just can't generate a lot of heat and breathe hot, humid air because they're going to overheat.
Yeah. Okay, and we've got an email question now. Suggestions for dogs that are afraid of thunderstorms and pace around and aren't able to settle down.
Well, I'll talk about that real quick because I did have that issue and I tried as many things. There's something I didn't try that they have now, and there's something, it's a product called Thunder Wrap, which is a like a T-shirt or a blanket that's secure. I think you just Google Thunder Wrap and you'll see it. And that is supposed to be quite effective from people whom I've spoken to about it.
The theory being that there's charged ions during storms and that grounds the dog somehow.
Yeah, so that apparently does work. But I ended up having to get prescription medication tranquilizers from my veterinarian and gratefully live close enough always here that if a thunderstorm popped up, I could run home and give her some medication. And that the thunderstorms went to fireworks and fireworks went to, you know, and I've told the story before, but she would stand on the most beautiful, clear, sunny day and look out to the west because she knew something was coming and it wasn't anywhere near us yet. It just got worse as she got older.
Many, many years ago, we had a white shepherd who, if she was outside during a storm, she'd break into the house, and if she was inside, she'd break out of the house. She was just terrified of storms and, in fact, died of a heart attack during a storm. So we didn't have the drugs and wraps and things we have nowadays, but it's a real problem. And there are many, if you get a dog catalog, there's all kinds of cures in pet supply things, and some work, some don't.
The theory, and I never really bought into it, but it makes sense in a way, but I don't think it works, to have thunderstorm CDs or something that they can listen to, because it's not just the noise. It's the change in the barometric pressure. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more involved than just sound. So,
okay, very good. This is Focus. Our guests this morning, dog trainers Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel. And we have about maybe 8 minutes left in this portion of the program. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, if you'd like to talk with us. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Or by email, will-talk@illinois.edu.
I'm so used to us going off the air at 1:50. I was hurrying through those last sentences because I thought I was going to get the...
No, we have extra time here. Okay. We're finished.
That's good.
At 11:58.
Okay.
So
we have exactly 8 minutes left.
Okay.
See, people can call.
What are your favorite books about dogs? For reading, like novels or stories?
So many. I don't think I've ever read one that I didn't enjoy, to be real frank with you. I hear they're making a remake of Old Yeller that's coming out. I won't put that on my list to go see. Can't do the Old Yeller movies. What's your favorite? I used to love the Albert Payson, Terhune.
Robin
books.
Is very into Albert Payson, Terhune. My favorite book in that area is not about dogs. It's The Wind in the Willows, which I highly recommend to everybody. But let me tell you about Old Yeller. When I was a kid, you know, I saw Old Yeller, and I thought, boy, this is the smartest dog ever was. And then later, after becoming a big-time dog trainer, I saw Old Yeller, and you can see the dog looking off camera to his handler. And I know the handler's, I know, is giving hand signals. And Yeller's he's not looking at the actors. He's looking off camera. And then he lays down and he sits up. And I'm going, boy, we do that in our beginning class. So it spoiled it for me.
But so Robin liked those, the Albert Payson, Terhune, Sunnybank Collies, Lad a Dog. Oh, and I was so excited. It was about 6 or 7 years ago. I went to a garage sale at a church, and they had first edition books, hardcover. I got them for a quarter. I think I bought four of them. I could read those today. Yeah. And I think that and Lassie, and that led to my lifelong love of collies. I don't know why I've never had one, but...
Oh, I'm blanking.
Wolf and Bobby, and I can remember all those dogs' names.
A friend of ours in the Malamute Club has written several...
Susan
Conant, mm-hmm. and give a plug, but I'm in two of her books.
He is.
Cool.
I and my dogs are in two of her books.
Let's take a call. I think this will probably be our last call this morning. Line one, Champagne. Good morning.
Good morning. Don't forget Bob, Son of Battle.
Oh, that's right.
But I'm going to ask if you would just talk a little bit about the monks of, is it New Skeet? And how they raise their dogs. And I'll just hang up and listen. I'm so glad you're back on.
Oh, thanks. Well, you know, and Jim, so they wrote their first book back in the 70s, maybe?
Well, what's his name?
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Oh, what's his name?
Blakey got all these
names. He came and spoke to us.
He spoke to our... He actually wrote most of the book on how to be your dog's best friend or what
was that the name of it? Whatever.
The monks of New Skeet. New Skeet is a monastery, I think, in New England. Somewhere in the...
Well, we're awful vague in our details,
aren't
we?
Yeah, but as a discipline, you know, they don't make brandy, they don't make wine. They train German shepherd dogs. Breed and train them. And that's where, and we're both blanking on his name.
What is his name?
And he
I
left.
I can see his face.
Yeah, he left the monastery and he became a dog behavior consultant in New York City. But he came and spoke to our club, 25 years ago.
No, it wasn't that long ago. I wasn't here.
24 years ago. But it's kind of a holistic approach to training puppies.
Yeah, but they were their first book because they were very they promoted the alpha role. They were very dominance based in their training, and I didn't like their first book. Then they came out with the second book. Then they came out with the second book, and they had altered modified some of their training techniques, but it still was kind of out of the pale of reward positive motivational based training. But they sell their dogs. They're nice dogs.
So you're saying their books are politically incorrect?
No, it just didn't agree with my philosophy. So
there are more things in heaven and earth, Carol, than something.
I know. But anyway, I didn't agree with their philosophy of training, although it was very successful for them. And I based that statement on people reading how to do an alpha roll, for example, which
is
way out of favor. I mean,
don't ever do an alpha roll. Ever. Never, ever, never.
But people reading these things thought, well, if it worked for the monks, it'll work for me. And then they can, you know, you damage the relationship. You can get bitten. It's just that. But it's just not the thing to do. Now, that said, I don't know if there's a third revision to their book or not.
In the Wolf Pack, an alpha role is a show by the less dominant that they are less dominant. It isn't the more dominant doesn't roll them in order to teach them their position. But for some reason, when the humans get a hold of it, if I roll the dog, it'll be submissive.
Mm-hmm.
No, if the dog's submissive, he'll roll. But you don't have to do anything. We had somebody in a class. I don't know how much time we have.
I had her in my class.
This is years ago, rolling this guard dog. And this dog has all his teeth bared. And I said, ma'am, don't do that. You know. So I finally got her to stop. After the class, I go out in the parking lot. She's rolling the dog in the parking lot. And all I can think of is, boy, she had her face right next to this dog's teeth. I never would have done that.
It was a nice Rottweiler.
Rottie, yeah.
And it didn't need that. But anyway, so that's what I remember from those books. And I kind of dismissed them as far as valid training methods. But I did enjoy reading about
Job Michael Evans.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Job
Michael, J-O-B-E, Michael Evans. And he's written a lot of interesting books on dealing with problem dogs.
I haven't seen one for a couple of years, so I wonder what he's up to.
He's dead.
Oh, he died?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's why he hasn't written anything since
he
died.
Oh, I didn't know he died.
May he rest in peace.
Yes. Okay. But anyway, it's interesting reading about the monastery raising dogs.
I'm reading an interesting book at the moment. It's a novel, and it's called The Story of Edgar Sawtell. Have you read this?
I've got it.
It's intense. I'm halfway through. But it's very interesting. It's in part, it's about a family that breeds dogs. And I'm not going to say anything more because...
that's a big spoiler, that one. I haven't finished it.
As it as it goes along, there are lots of surprises in it. You go, oh, so you keep turning the pages. So I don't want to say anything more about it than that. But it is quite an intense read. It was an Oprah selection.
Mm-hmm.
And she loved
it. I mean, she really loved that book.
The paperback that I've got, I think it's got a reader's guide at the back. I haven't looked at that because I don't want to go there till the book's over. But anyway.
I love dog books. Yeah. But it doesn't matter if they have a happy ending. I'm still going to cry. I'm like so hardwired to do that.
What a sissy.
I am. It's so sad.
Well, we have to wrap it up here for this morning, but you guys will be back, and it will be on a first Friday, and it'll be in the 11 o'clock hour, and we don't know when the next one will be, but stay tuned, as they say.
Maybe our listeners will clamor for us to be on.
That would be nice. I'd love to hear that. So, anywho, Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, thank you so much.
Thank you.